Nail-biting in the global bond market. Interest rates for U.S. federal debt surged to a 10-month high Wednesday, prompted by fears China is on the verge of rethinking its massive investment in American bonds following a Bloomberg report. China is the biggest foreign holder of U.S. treasuries, and any big moves it makes is sure to have consequences. And it may be using that as leverage against possible actions from the White House.
Almost a month since their arrest in Myanmar, two Reuters journalists accused of breaching the country's Official Secrets Act appeared at a Yangon court on Wednesday, where prosecutors sought charges against them under a law which carries a maximum prison sentence of 14 years. Walone and Choi Soo were arrested nearly a month ago after they were invited to meet police officers over dinner. They'd been covering a crisis in the western state of Rakhine, which has seen more than 500,000 Rohingya Muslims flee a fierce military crackdown.
Hyundai now backing one of Uber's fiercest Asian rivals. The South Korean carmaker said Thursday it's investing in Grab, a ride-hailing app that says it's the biggest player in Southeast Asia. The two didn't say how much money Hyundai will pour into the company, but Grab will get a helping hand, rolling out services using some of Hyundai's eco-friendly cars. The app's latest round of fundraising had other big names, Didi Chuxing in China and from Japan's SoftBank.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's January 11th. Glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. 5:11 in the morning. We've got a great broadcast for you today. Our Thought Leader Thursday conversation will begin momentarily. Rod Murray is here from Associated Bank. And a little bit later in the program, the cost of having the flu, medical expenses, and the cost in terms of a hit on productivity. You'll never guess the numbers. And this conversation is very timely, considering the flu is now spreading like wildfire across the country. Illinois is one of the states with a high level of flu right now. So that'll be our conversation in the second segment this morning. First, let's get you up to date on the latest business news and markets on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Looks like a weak start to the day on Wall Street. Dow and NASDAQ futures are lower, higher rather, I should say, but the NASDAQ and S&P futures are flat. Dow futures are only up about 13 points this morning. Markets are lower this morning in all of Europe. And in Asia this morning, markets are mixed with the Nikkei off about a third, everything else off just about a fraction. Oil is trading at $63.93 a barrel, which is up about 36 cents. A couple of stories we're watching for you. Oak Brook-based McDonald's says it will stop using plastic foam cups, which keep drinks icy cold. But that is really having trouble with environmentalists. They have been complaining about McDonald's cups for quite some time now. And the world's largest restaurant operator says it will now remove those by the end of the year, the cups. And by 2020, it will move to 100% fiber-based packaging. The Trump administration has been pushing American businesses to withhold fewer taxes from paychecks by February, aiming to quickly deliver the boost in take-home pay that Republicans promised in the tax law. But that rush to change things could expose millions of you to more taxes when you start filing in April of 2019. An independent report yesterday by a tax group says that the cause of this is an underfunded and ill-prepared Internal Revenue Service that can't answer questions fast enough and won't have enough people to answer the millions of questions that will come in around tax law. Also blaming the very quick way that the tax bill was put into place. So watch your W-2s and W-4s if they are changing here moving forward. And according to a new survey from Discover, millennials are outperforming older generations when it comes to saving for the future. A survey by Discover finds about 81% of millennials are currently saving in some capacity, compared to 74% of Gen Xers and 77% of baby boomers. It's Thought Leader Thursday. Rod Murray is here from Associated Bank. We'll jump right in. Rod, good morning. Welcome back to the opening bell.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too, and congratulations. We should start off the Thought Leader conversation this morning by talking about your appointment at Associated Bank.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah, big shoes to fill for Brooke Hansen, who's been a contributor here on WGN. Retired at the end of the year, so appointed the Chicago Market President, effective January 1.
You know, when you walked in this morning, I asked you if we should we call you Mr. President or if we could still just call you Rod. So
yeah, the day job doesn't change, so yeah. Please stick with the Rod.
Well, it's good to see you, and lots going on in the banking world, and we came across this wonderful article that I thought we'd start with today about what's coming in 2018 and some of the issues and questions that banking will have to deal with. And I suppose the first thing everybody's talking about is the tax bill. I know Associated Bank has made some internal decisions regarding the tax bill and pay raises and bonuses, but there's other questions that will be answered by this in 2018.
Absolutely. The Associated, like a lot of the banks and a lot of the other large companies, did take action to raise the minimum wage and pay a bonus to the hourly employees, which is great. And we're seeing a lot of companies do that. So then what does it mean for the further effects? What does it mean for our companies? What does it mean then for us as consumers as that money flows through? There's a lot of hope and questions. You're probably going to see some ebbs and flows, differing opinions on it, Steve. But in the short term, does that bring a lot of cash to companies and corporations that are going to use that cash to pay down balances, debt? But then will that also spark some spending? And will it also then spark, you know, money into all of our individual pockets that, you know, furthers the GDP?
From the banking industry itself, this could produce profits. I've seen double-digit profits potentially coming this year.
Sure. I mean, and coupled with, you know, the banks, we're going to see, like all companies, we're going to see the benefits of that. But it's also coupled with, you know, the potential for a slowdown in maybe some regulations. They won't go away, but do your costings go away? Mm-hmm. There also are, and we'll probably get to it, but there's talk of further rate increases. So all of those things combined certainly has a rosy outlook in the near term for banks and other large corps.
And the rate increases we could see, I think, two or three this year. And the idea, too, that maybe our savings accounts will start paying us a little interest finally.
Right. We'll see how that plays out. You know, the banking sector has held pretty tight. It was so low for so long that as the rates have gone up, you haven't seen the movement by your large banks or regional banks or even small banks, you know, to do the savings account increases at the same pace. But at some point, you'll have a tipping point. And, you know, the yield curve will dictate something happens there, and the savings rates will eventually, you know, get pushed up.
What was loan growth like in 2017? And what are the estimations for it this year?
So 2017, you know, every article you read and certainly everybody you talk to in the banking sector, that's described as benign or tepid, slow, some of the lowest levels in a long time. And the outlook on the short term is that might continue in the very near term, just because of what we talked about with maybe some companies having some more cash on hand. You know, there's an outlook that as in the future here, that it will spur some economic development, some capital expenditure spending, some hirings, some growth. You know, so the further outlook is a little bit rosier than the near term. But, you know, to your point, 2017 was a pretty slow year, and you had to find your pockets to grow.
We keep hearing with a discussion of the tax bill, now tax law, that companies will be bringing money back from overseas. Presumably, they're going to be putting that money in banks, right?
Absolutely. They'll be putting it in the banks, but then we hope that, frankly, they go and spend it, you know, to continue to spur the economy. And while that's great for the banks to have it sitting there in deposit accounts, you know, the idea is that money can come back and be put back into play to do what it's intended to do. And if it doesn't, then frankly, it, you know, isn't working like they would have intended it to work.
One of the other issues I saw in this article was about credit quality. And by all accounts, last year, credit quality was probably the best ever. How will that continue this year?
It's in the near term, it's, you know, to use that same word, it's still kind of benign, but to your point and to the article that you're referencing, it was about as low as it could get in terms of loan losses, credit issues. So you have to think about that in the grander scheme, that it can't probably get any better, so it can only get a little bit worse. But that's not necessarily, you know, a bad sign or a bad piece of the economy. There are going to be certain pockets that are going to be hit more than others, you know, certain sectors that you have to watch, you know, but overall, you know, again, the descriptions are that benign for the near term. You know, there's a further outlook that people are watching what are credit card defaults, credit card late payments happening right now, auto late payments happening. You know, so those are some indicators that the economists and certainly, you know, the financial executives are watching. But then on the flip side of things, you know, there's positive outlooks on home values, you know, which can spur home equity loan growth and can spur some other growth there. So it's probably going to get a little bit worse, but that's only because it couldn't get any better.
One of the things you mentioned in there was sort of this feeling of optimism, and you hope that some of the at least corporate money goes back into the community for projects and stuff. But also, we're seeing from a consumer level, I think the report was just a few days ago, that people are taking out more credit card debt, taking on more because, again, that's a sign that they feel confident that they can take that out and start spending in the economy.
Right. And money spurs money. So money spent is money earned by someone else. And as long as the debt loads and the debt levels can, you know, aren't taken above and beyond what people can repay, whether that's individuals or small businesses or companies, you know, all of those effects will have, you know, a positive effect on the economy. It's just making sure that we don't get above our over our skis in those sectors, making sure that, you know, and we don't even know, Steve, what could happen in the world and the economy, and none of us know that. But, you know, as long as it's a calm and a normal manner, then it should spur things on.
Do you have nightmares as a head in the banking industry, and what are they?
So I wouldn't say nightmares. You know, at this point, I'm 30 years in, so I don't have any more nightmares. But certainly, you know, things that every bank is thinking about is what happens on the tech space, what happens in the cyberspace. You know, that's probably the biggest, you know, the two biggest concerns that the banks have, and that our primary focus. We always are going to focus on revenue and growth. But the things that you think about all the time that can keep you up at night are those two sectors.
Yeah. The reason I ask you that is because the article that I wanted to talk about, they actually say this is banking's worst nightmare, and that is the Amazon effect on banking. And people seem to be thinking that Amazon's about ready to get in the banking business.
Right. There are a lot of varying opinions on that. And, you know, depending on what you read, who you believe, it would be foolish to think that they're not going to put their toe in somehow. They kind of already are. You know, they're issuing, you know, they certainly have their Amazon Cash. You know, they're putting their toe into the water there. But I think that what they'll do is, this is just my opinion, is they have such an outstanding, you know, data analytics and customer capture and look through to the client. You know, they're going to want to control the financial ecosystem. So when we talk about Amazon becoming a bank, could they? Sure. I mean, they have so much, you know, they're such a behemoth that they can do what they want to do. But I don't know how it'll happen and when it'll happen. You know, there's obviously the regulations. You still have political pressures. I mean, Amazon is all about revenue and revenue growth. So they're going to find whatever they can do to chase the revenue dollars.
I think when people talk about Amazon, they always think about PayPal. I know when I do, because that's generally how I pay for a lot of stuff on Amazon, is with PayPal. Do you think that would be a likely target for Amazon if they were looking to maybe buy something new in banking?
It could be. I mean, there's speculation that they might just do a small bank acquisition to dip their toe in the water, but a PayPal certainly could be a way, you know, to kind of see how the end-to-end payment process, does that benefit them, and does that bring assets into them and bring revenue? You know, I think that while PayPal is an option, I think that maybe it's more of the how can they lend money to, and they're doing that in some small business sectors. If you're a vendor of theirs, how can they lend money? How can they drive revenue there more than deposit gathering at this point? Again, that's my opinion, but who knows where they'll go.
And I think Jeff Bezos, who's in charge of Amazon, he's now the richest guy in the world, so he could loan money personally.
Absolutely. I mean, it's amazing. Yeah. I saw a picture the other day of him and his office, his tiny little office with a Amazon.com banner on there, and that was about all he had. So.
Yeah, and the rocket, the model rocket in the back, where he's probably got all of his cash stuffed in that. But you know, I ask you about Amazon, but you know, there's others out there too that have already sort of taken over this fintech space. Google, Square, others that are doing this. Yeah, Apple is out there as well. Are those just as much of a threat, do you think, as Amazon is?
I mean, I think that, you know, the word is the word threat. They're all out there and potentially are going to get into the space. I don't think that they're going to replace the traditional banks. You know, could they augment it? But I don't think they want to go out there and just be deposit gatherers. But they could do it, could be there. But it's going to be a long road with the regulations. You got to remember that, you know, Walmart tried to do this from 98 to 07 unsuccessfully. It doesn't mean it can't happen and that things won't change with the new regime. But all of them are probably going to try. And who's the first one in and then who will follow them right after?
As we're speaking here, the Consumer Electronics Show is underway in Las Vegas, and everything is about the Amazon Voice Assistant and the Google Voice Assistant. And I saw a video of a banking demonstration where somebody had their new glasses, and you can ask the Amazon Assistant, hey, what's my bank? You know, I don't want to give the direction because I don't want ours to turn on here, but what's my balance? Or, you know, tell me, pay this bill or whatever. Is this voice assistant going to come to banking, do you think?
I think it can, and it probably will. It's just, again, when, and making sure that you have all the protections in place. You know, we mentioned cybersecurity, and it's always about the protections, the regulations, the privacy, but it will eventually probably happen. You know, it's just, when does it become mainstream? It's certainly what, you know, the younger folks who are coming up, they want it. Everybody wants it. Yeah. We want that, and it's going to be the wave of the future, is everything voice-activated tech and now.
You mentioned security there. This on all of the lists I've seen about this year, what is coming 2018. This is on everybody's list of things. The cybersecurity and safety threat to our money still is one of the top risks.
It is. And, you know, back to your earlier point when you were talking about the tax reform and what do companies and certainly banks, you know, what does that mean to us and to the overall sector? I think that's where you'll probably see some of the money, you know, plowed back in, is on not eliminating, but trying to protect and reduce the cyber risk.
And it seems that it's off the front pages. It's off page 5, 10, 12. You can go into the newspaper. We don't hear anything more about this Equifax breach. That's still hanging out there.
It is still hanging out there. It's strange how it's kind of gone away. I mean, I think about it right on a personal front all the time, and have, you know, took actions. But it seems to have lost it's lost the front page news, but it'll be out there for a long time. We'll see where it rears its head again, you know, in the future, and just what is the impact of that? We still don't know.
And the regulatory part of the equation, too, as we look ahead, this is going to be a big year for a more regulation rollback. What's happened already that's good for banks like Associated?
So I don't think that there have been any actual rollbacks that have happened per se. What is good for banks like Associated and others is more of probably the tone and some of the appointments, you know, of those regulatory agencies. You know, what is the give and take going to be? I don't think any bank is going to roll back its what it does to protect, you know, its shareholders, its stakeholders, and its clients. But I think that the effect of it in terms of the costing for how many reviews you have and what the impact of that is what's probably going to change, is more of the tone. You know, there's talk of the regulations changing, pulling back a little bit of the Dodd-Frank, but that, first off, it won't happen for quite a while. But if there's anything that could happen there, that they roll some of that back, that could be good for the regional banks and the smaller banks especially. But that has a long tail on it. There's a lot of other things going on. You have the tax reform that we've talked about and some other bills that are out there. Those could all have really good positive impacts for the banks and the regional banks, but it's not in final form by any means.
Well, how would you describe it? Is it regulatory uncertainty or regulatory certainty? Because one of those is positive, one of them is negative. How do you view it?
I still think that there is regulatory uncertainty, you know, that we don't know exactly what will happen. We're positive on the thoughts, on the forethought of it, but I think it's still an uncertain action because, you know, back to the point I made, we can't get rid of them, we won't get rid of them, and they're there for good reasons. But there's still a lot of uncertainty of how it gets implemented and who it affects, you know, the large banks, the regional banks, the small banks, you know, and then ultimately to us, to the consumer, what is it that that happens and when? But it's still an uncertain.
Will 2018 be a year of a good M&A action, merger and acquisition action?
You know, it's, you know, with this tax bill, I, again, personally think that it might. We're seeing a little more activity in just in terms of people talking and deal flow. You know, the outlook from some of your, you know, your sponsors and your money on the sidelines says that they see a potential pickup here coming, you know, later this year in the M&A side of things. So I think so. But remembering that last year and even the year before, those were pretty low. So you have a low denominator to start with.
Rod, always good talking with you. And again, congratulations on your promotion. We'll see you next time.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Rod Murray is the now market president at Associated Bank, and he's our thought leader today. Remember, you can hear more thought leader conversations at WGNradio.com on the opening bell page. And that's, by the way, where we'll post more of our conversation with Rod. We're going to continue after the bell this morning. Also, go over to AssociatedBank.com / Thought Leadership, and you can learn more about the thought leaders there and listen to more conversations and follow them on Twitter at Associated Biz.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Grubhub has partnered with White Castle to provide food delivery for the burger chain. Roughly 80 of White Castle's 450 restaurants will offer delivery now, with 45 more scheduled to offer the service by the end of the month. Sales Assembly, a Chicago-based organization that helps well-funded startups refine their sales and revenue strategies, is launching a new accelerator program designed for early-stage startups. The program, dubbed Venture Scale, is geared towards B2B software and technology companies. And be on the lookout for the Lyft logo on your next craft beer. Lyft announced it has partnered with Chicago's Batter Brow Brewing on a beer called Five Star Lager. The 12-ounce cans will be available in Chicago bars next week and will feature a discount code for up to $5 off a Lyft ride. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It's Thursday, and we're happy you're here with us today, and hopefully you're feeling okay, because all signs point to a really bad flu season. As a matter of fact, CDC says dangerous flu has been spreading rapidly across the U.S., escalating flu season earlier than usual. And a map late in the year ending December 30th that was put out by CDC shows Illinois and Indiana right in the high level of flu. We ran across an article this week about what all of this costs, both to our health and mainly to the economy. Carrie Paul is a reporter at MarketWatch.com and the reporter on that story, and she's with us this morning. Carrie, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thankfully, I don't have the flu. Hopefully, you don't either. But the numbers in your story just jumped off of the page. Talk to us a little bit about how much this is going to cost the economy.
Yes, I am feeling great, luckily, but it is going to be a particularly nasty flu season this year. The flu costs the U.S. an average of $10.4 billion annually, and that's just for direct medical expenses like hospitalizations. And then in addition to that, it will cost the U.S. economy $7 billion a year in sick days and lost productivity.
And that's the average. And so do those numbers go up or down, in this case up, when we see near epidemic levels of the flu?
Yeah, those numbers are definitely expected to go up this year. The strain of the flu that it's going around right now is similar to the 2009 swine flu virus, but it actually has affected more people in Australia, where it's already hit, than the swine flu did in the same time period. So all signs are pointing to it being a little more aggressive this year.
The lost productivity, how does that get added up? What does that take into account?
That takes into account people calling in sick from work or just generally being less productive if they do go into work, which you shouldn't do, by the way, if you're sick. So just general loss in productivity. And then on a personal level, the average person pays about $130 between doctor's visits and medicine when they get the flu.
And there are all kinds of other examples, too, of what the costs are. And one of the ones that is concerning from your story is that some hospitals are having problems finding some of the main items that they need to help treat people.
Right. So this is something I didn't realize before I was researching this story, but a lot of our IV bags and saline solutions come from Puerto Rico in the U.S. And so since Puerto Rico was hit so hard by the hurricane and a lot of places there are still not up and running at full capacity, we're having a shortage of IV bags and fluids for people, which is bad news when there's an increase in dehydrated individuals coming in for the flu.
The other part, too, of this is putting extra doctors and nurses on duty, and so that's a cost as well. And I know here in Chicago they've actually added some ambulances to the emergency fleet of response vehicles because of all of the cases here. You know, every year, Carrie, they tell us to get our shots and get vaccinated, and I guess the hope is that we could try to prevent some of these costs. How has that been working out?
Yeah, so the CDC obviously suggests that everybody get a flu shot. Every year, it's kind of a range of how effective that flu shot will be, and it is getting more and more effective just as people, you know, pinpoint the correct viruses and improve the technology. This year's strain, the problem is when you make a vaccine, the virus can change very quickly. So this year, it appears that the virus has changed really quickly, and the strain that the vaccine is targeting is a little bit different, so it isn't as effective as it usually is.
$40, I think, is what I saw in your article, generally, is what a flu shot costs. When you add that up with all of the population, that's sort of a bargain compared to how much we're spending, isn't it?
Right. When the average cost of getting the flu is $130, $40 is a pretty good bet on preventing it and keeping yourself safe. And in a lot of cases, it's free. If you have insurance, it's usually free. A lot of employers will have free flu shots, and especially if you're in the senior population, there are a lot of free services that will make sure you can get a flu shot, because the more people who get it, the less difficult this strain will be this year.
Do you feel like you've become an expert on the flu now, researching the story? And what kind of advice can you give those people out there who may be suffering from it right now in terms of getting over it fast enough and getting back on their feet?
Yeah, I do a little bit. And just from having the flu, of course, in my life, I think everyone has had it at least once. I think the main tips that people give you is always wash your hands, chicken noodle soup is always a good standby, and don't go into work if you're sick. That's another thing that I found in my research is a lot of people will still go into the office when they're sick. More than one quarter of American workers actually admit to going into work when they're sick, and that just makes it worse for everybody. You don't need to be taking one for the team and coming in even though you feel bad. It's better for everyone if you stay home.
Yeah, and every time I hear that, I too feel sorry for folks who don't get sick time, paid sick time. Does that impact all of the cost of this? I mean, there's a lot of discussions about health care and health insurance, and we've been talking about the cost of the flu, but this seems like something that companies might benefit companies to offer this to everybody to encourage people to not cost them even more money.
You're right. It would be probably financially beneficial all around if companies offered better sick pay. I know a lot of places have the flexibility nowadays with remote work that maybe you can work from home and still be productive without spreading your germs to everyone, but I know not everyone has that option, so definitely take a look at what your workplace policy is and act accordingly.
What else from your research on this either surprised you or jumped out of the notes at you?
I did think it was interesting that we compare our flu season to Australia to kind of foresee what is coming up, just because Australia's flu season is during July and August, since that's when their winter is, I guess. And so it's already sickened 233,000 people in Australia, this strain of the virus. And in comparison, in 2009 with the swine flu, it sickened far less people and was still making a lot of headlines. So you definitely are up against a very intense strain of a virus.
Is it too late to get that flu shot now that we're sort of in the high level of flu here, or can you get it at any point and be protected?
Yeah, we still have a couple months of flu season left, so I think it's definitely still worthwhile to get a flu shot. The CDC is still recommending that you do that.
All right, Carrie. Glad you're feeling well, and thank you for all of the information here. We're going to link out to your story. Carrie Paul, reporter at MarketWatch.com, thanks for getting up with us this morning.
Thank you.
All right, and you can follow Carrie on Twitter and also read more of her work at MarketWatch.com. The tally again with the flu, $10.4 billion in medical expenses, $7 billion in lost productivity.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, futures are weak, trying to find direction. Right now, they're pointed up, but just barely. Dow futures up 22. NASDAQ and S&P futures are up just 2 and 5 points, respectively. Now, the latest on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Soybean futures down to a four-month low yesterday, declining for the third straight session on expectations of higher stocks due to slower exports and a forecast of increased production in Brazil. Wheat futures slightly higher, corn pretty much flat. Investors squaring positions ahead of USDA's final crop production numbers due out on Friday at 11 o'clock in the morning. Board of Trade March soybeans settled down 8¾ cents at $9.55 a bushel, the lowest level since August 31. And apparently analysts and traders are expecting a boost to U.S. soybean stocks. Checking the livestock story, NAFTA came into the hog market yesterday here in the United States. They slid from a one-year top earlier in the session, rattled by fund selling and Canadian government concerns over NAFTA talks with the United States. Canada increasingly convinced that President Trump will soon announce that the U.S. intends to pull out of the North American Free Trade Agreement, and Mexico and Canada are among the top destinations for U.S. pork exports. Lower cash and wholesale beef values pressured live cattle futures at the Mercantile Exchange yesterday. What are traders expecting in crop production numbers in that report due out Friday? Well, they're expecting the corn crop to come in at 14.5 billion bushels, a 175.4 bushel per acre yield. And they're expecting soy production to come in at 4,427 million bushels. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. A couple of other stories before we leave you this morning from the business world. A study commissioned by the London mayor shows that almost 500,000 jobs are under threat if Britain fails to strike a deal on future relations with the European Union before it leaves the bloc. The research released today warns of a lost decade of significantly lower economic growth, resulting in 482,000 fewer jobs and about $67 billion of lost investment by 2030 in the worst, if the worst case scenario becomes a reality. Official data show that the German economy, Europe's biggest, accelerated last year to grow by 2.2%. The growth figure released today by the Federal Statistical Office was the strongest since 2011, when the economy there grew by 3.7%. Gross domestic product expanded 1.9% in 2016 and 1.7% in 2015. The Statistics Office didn't immediately release a figure for fourth quarter growth in its preliminary 2017 report. Now, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for Thursday, January 11th. The Labor Department reports on U.S. producer price inflation for December. It also releases the producer price index this morning. And the Treasury Department releases the federal budget for December. Freddie Mac, the mortgage company, reports on weekly average U.S. mortgage rates. And in the earnings area, Delta Airlines reports quarterly financial earnings today. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, January 11th.